What's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Before we get started with today's case, I wanted to just share a little update in a case that we covered on our Patreon back in July, which is the Gary Ridgway, aka the Green River Killer.
There's an update?
Yeah. So basically, earlier this week, the last known remains tied to his murders were identified thanks to a lab in Texas.
Wow.
So initially, the bones were named Bones 20 when they were discovered in 2003, because at that time, investigators were unable to confirm their identity.
Right.
But according to the Kings County Sheriff's Office, the remains belonged to 16-year-old Tammy Lyles, who disappeared from Seattle in 1983.
Oh, my God.
So she was later identified as a victim of Ridgway's in 1988 after a separate series of remains was traced to her. So they had like some of her remains, but these remains were, for whatever reason, unable to be tied to her, probably because it was 2003, you know, the 80s and then 2003. So science wasn't as advanced as it is today. But
wow, that's crazy. So it's not another victim that they hadn't already connected to him.
Right. But they did think that it was initially, but now they have confirmed that it was someone that they already, you know, knew that was a victim of his.
Wow.
But
okay.
Now all 49 victims have been found and identified, and hopefully that, you know, they can all each rest peacefully.
Yeah. Wow. That is
so
crazy.
I know. It's like, it's obviously bittersweet because someone lost their life, but I'm glad that it wasn't an additional victim, that they were able to tie it to someone who had already been identified as one of his victims.
Right.
Cause you know, just that unknowing of is there another victim? Could there possibly be another victim? Which they suspect he had more than 49 victims to begin with, but there's just not any evidence to support that aside from the evidence that they have of the 49 victims. So I just wanted to share that because, you know, that is a big case. I know I didn't cover it here. It was covered on our Patreon, but I'm sure most of you are familiar with that case. It's a pretty big one, a pretty well-known one in the true crime space. So
yeah.
I just wanted to share that because it's nice to hear, you know, when cases can be fully closed.
Yeah.
And he is rotten in prison. So,
yeah. And if you want to listen to that case, our Patreon's always linked in the show notes. It is a crazy one. And even if you don't want to listen to us do it and you haven't heard it, look it up because it's wild.
Yeah, it is. All right. So now I'm going to jump into today's case, and we are covering the disappearance of Shamika Cozy. Just a few days after Christmas on December 28th, 2008, Shamika Cozy went to spend the night with her cousin at her aunt's house. So this was a pretty regular occurrence for Shamika and her cousin. They were pretty tight and they lived about 10 minutes away from each other. So her cousin and her aunt lived in Berkeley, Missouri, and Shamika lived in an apartment in Hazelwood with her mom and her two sisters.
Okay, so like it sounds like they hung out a lot, like lived near each other. They probably like hopped over to each other's houses, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So according to her cousin, they watched several movies that night and they stayed up until about 1:30 in the morning. And then her cousin decided to go to bed and she left Shamika to sleep on the couch, which was like normal, nothing out of the ordinary there. Now, this part it's unclear exactly where they got this idea from, but it was reported in every single source, so I wanted to mention it. But over the course of the night, Shamika was in and out of the house several times. So her family and police kind of wondered if she was communicating with someone and she would go out to meet them and come back in, or maybe she was fighting with somebody and was like going in and out trying to resolve the issue. It's very obviously unclear as to why she was going in and out of the home, but right. somewhere somebody, I guess, confirmed this. And, you know, from the time her cousin went to bed until the next morning when her family noticed that she was missing, she was in and out of the house.
That's kind of odd, but okay.
Yeah. So the following morning when her aunt and cousin awoke, they found that Shamika was nowhere to be found. They immediately, of course, called Shamika's mother, Paula, and asked if maybe she had gone home for some reason. And Paula told them that Shamika was not there.
Okay.
So when Shamika left her aunt's house, she left the door unlocked. And that kind of indicated to them that she had planned to return, because it's not like she had a key to their home. She also left behind the clothing that she had packed for the sleepover, as well as other personal items.
Okay, so to me, that's very clear that she, like, didn't...
Like, she planned to come back.
Leave with the intention of being gone for a long time. Right,
exactly. So she did, however, take her purse and her jacket with her, because it's, you know, December, Missouri. It's probably pretty chilly about that time of year. And, you know, you're a girl, woman, you're going to take your purse with you.
Yeah, take your purse, yeah. So that's an indication that she wasn't, like, abducted from inside the house or something. Like, she clearly walked out of the house on her own accord.
Right. So that was another thing. There was no sign of struggle. There was no sign of forced entry. So it did kind of seem like she left willingly.
Okay.
And at the time of her disappearance, she did not have a cell phone. So there was no way to, like, reach out to her and try to contact her that way.
Okay.
So Shamika's family called the Berkeley Police Department to report her missing, and police assumed right away that, you know, Shamika left on her own free will and that she would eventually return home.
I mean, it's, I think she left on her own free will, but
my thing just is like, why? Okay, so she left on her own free will, fine, but she is a child.
Yeah.
If she ran away or she left on her own free will, we should still be looking for her.
Yeah, like even if it was completely herself, which I don't think is going to be the case here, like I think maybe somebody like lured her out or something, but even if she was like a kid that was like, I'm going to go run away for whatever reason, even though there was no indication for that, you should still be out looking for her because she is a child.
Exactly. And I even wrote, like, if this was a six-year-old who to show their parents, I'm going to run away because I'm mad that you did this or that, police would still immediately go and search for them. So why are we not holding that same standard just because she's a teenager? It does not make sense to me. She's an endangered child that's missing, regardless.
Yeah. No. And she clearly doesn't have, like, her clothes and other things other than a jacket and purse. So, like, even if she was wanting to, like, you know, run away to show her parents or whatever, for whatever reason, she can't just survive out there with a jacket and purse. Like, she's a teenager. She needs food. She needs shelter. And, like, she can't just go and find that super easily. I mean, nobody can, whether you're a teenager or an adult, but even less so when you're a teenager that doesn't have a cell phone.
Yeah. And she didn't have a car. So it's not like she could just, you know, drive to get the things that she needs or whatever. Like, it just doesn't.
Like,
I just,
let's put a little more things together before we just assume, like, oh no, she'll just come back.
Yeah, she'll just, you know, find her way back. So after Shamika was reported missing by her mother, police allegedly refused to assist in any searches since she was classified as a runaway. So that kind of forced Paula and her other family members to search for Shamika on their own.
Again, even if she is a runaway, why are we not... I mean, I know, like,
looking for her.
I know that, you know, these departments only have limited resources and they probably have like policies that say if they're classified as a runaway, you can't put resources towards it or something. Like, it's probably not the actual officer's fault
Right.
But it's so frustrating that that's a thing. Like, it should be.
It shouldn't
if
be.
Any
yeah.
child is gone for whatever reason, resources should go towards finding them because they are not legal adults.
Right. And I'm just thinking, like, and when I was doing my research, I was thinking, like, you know, when you're driving around and you just see, like, a cop sitting off in the cut waiting to catch somebody speeding. Let's mm-hmm. send him out there to go look for the missing yeah. person, the missing child. Like, they, you know, we want to give them the benefit of the doubt, and we always give credit where credit is due, especially when it comes to police. You know, we try to give credit where credit is due, but it's just, they just lack the interest almost when it comes to teenage missing runaways or whatever.
And I feel like it's not even the actual, like, officers. It's like yeah. the higher up policies and things like that. Because if right. you're told you need to go get this many speeding tickets, that's what they're going to do.
Right.
But if the people higher up and, like, the policies were changed that it was like, we're going to prioritize children that are missing no matter mm-hmm. what the case be, why they're missing, then they yeah. would go and do that.
Yeah. The problem is at the root, and the root is the policies and the, you know, commanders or whoever makes the rules, whether it's like legislature.
Government.
Yeah, exactly. Like the local government, whatever, things need to change. And I think they're like slowly progressing in the right direction, but I also feel like we're exactly where we were 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah. So Paula, her mother, along with other family members, you know, we're searching for Shamika. They handed out flyers with Shamika's photo and information printed on them. Eventually, police kind of started assisting, not so much with the search, but they did start doing a little bit of some investigating on their own. And they brought in some of Shamika's friends to question them. But unfortunately, they seemed to be of very little help.
And that still doesn't make sense to me. If you're going to put any resources towards this, why aren't we, like, putting the resources to searching for her? I mean, I guess, okay, never mind. I backtrack what I just said, because I guess bringing the friends in and talking to them is searching for her in a sense, because you're, like, trying to yeah. figure out if anybody knows something. So, okay, never mind. I take back right. what I said, but
that's okay.
It sucks that it, like, took, like, so long and mm-hmm. that her family had to do so much before.
They
anybody.
Lost all that valuable time.
Yeah. I mean, they always say the first 48 hours, there's literally a show, first 48, like the first 48 hours are the most important.
Yeah. So why don't we just put resources towards that first 48? And then if we can't find them, then we say, okay, they're a runaway. They're going right. to come back and then exhaust no more effort. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Makes no sense, but that's not right. our, not our place to try to make that change.
So they also tried to question a neighbor of Shamika's that she was known to sneak out with and go to clubs using fake IDs.
Okay.
So the girl's parents, though, they refused to help, claiming that they didn't want to get involved. And honestly, like, at first I was like, what? Like, this is a missing child. But on the other hand, I don't really find it unusual because there, especially in this case, there was a lack of trust and communication between their community and the police right off the bat. And, you know, because she was presumed a runaway so quickly, why would people want to help and put themselves out? I mean,
right.
I see both sides of the fence on this one because, like, you know, as a mother, I would want everyone to tell every little detail they know about my child, but also they don't have the best relationship with the police in that community. So it's like,
right.
I'm not going to stick my neck out and risk putting myself at danger or putting myself at risk for being arrested or whatever the case may be,
right.
trying to give information that. Really, I mean, what did they know, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because chances are they didn't know their daughter was sneaking out with a fake ID either.
Yeah. Ugh.
So after Shamika's disappearance, her mother found that fake ID that I just mentioned in Shamika's belongings. And she also found out that Shamika had been sneaking out, going to adult clubs, and possibly smoking marijuana, which to me is completely normal for a 16-year-old. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't going to like adult clubs at 16, but I was definitely sneaking out and, you know, smoking weed. So I don't know.
I mean, I was a very like goody-two-shoes and did not do anything like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is, like you said, like more or less normal for a teenager. Like teenagers do that kind of stuff. It's just way more troublesome here that she is now missing.
Yeah. And putting herself in adult situations at 16 can be very dangerous, especially because the area of town that she was known to frequent was a very seedy, not so great area of town. Like they were saying that there was like one club and then like four strip clubs. And they were just not good places that you want to be seen at, especially as a young woman.
Yeah, and it's not even her. Like when you're that young, you one can't consent. Mm-hmm. You can't consent if you're not an adult, and two can be easily taken advantage of and manipulated by people.
Yeah.
And so it's not her; it's the other people. I mean, my parents used to always say, "We trust you; we don't trust
everyone
other
else.
People." And I feel like this is that exact situation where it's like, you know, I know that you're not going to purposefully put yourself in a situation that is dangerous, but people can take advantage of you.
Yeah, at 16, you're very naive. I mean, you have little life experience under your belt and pretty much zero wisdom. So you can easily get yourself in a very scary situation.
Yeah.
So on top of those concerns, Paula also had a concern because prior to Shamika's disappearance, she had seen Shamika in a dark car with an older guy.
Okay.
According to one source, there was rumors circulating that Shamika was involved in a secret relationship with an older man who was in the military, though this rumor has never been confirmed, and they were never able to track down this older guy that was in the military. But I wanted to mention it nonetheless because it was mentioned, you know, as a possible, I guess, lead, even though it didn't end up leading anywhere.
Okay, interesting.
Years later, when Paula and her two other daughters were packing up to move, they discovered what they felt was a major clue in Shamika's case. And obviously, Shamika unknowingly left it behind.
Right.
But they came across a notebook. And in this notebook, it appeared that Shamika and an undisclosed friend had shared notes back and forth. And in one of the notes, Shamika confessed to her friend that she was planning to tell her then boyfriend, who is referred to as LB, that she was pregnant.
Okay. Oh, no.
So according to the entry, LB was not too thrilled with the news. And Shamika wrote, quote, "I can't allow him to feel like he's got power over me," which Paula obviously found concerning.
Yeah.
So she relayed this information to police, but refused to hand over the notebook. Which, again, I was like, why didn't she just hand over the notebook? But I also can't blame her because she, at that time, and even now, felt that police weren't doing much to help locate her daughter.
Right.
So she might maybe felt like, I didn't want to give this over and then them lose it or not care about it and it get just put on a shelf somewhere and me never see it again.
Yeah, you know? And it's like, you don't know where she is and like, you don't want to give up more information that could like, I don't know, point to something that she might have done that they could like try to get in trouble or something.
True. So after Paula, you know, gave police this information, they did look into LB and they were able to find him and question him. And he told police that Shamika had been involved with multiple guys and that she had likely ran away with one of them.
So, and so
we don't
so
know if he's just like,
yeah, is he just trying to deflect blame?
Like, yeah. Or if he was involved.
Right. Like if he was involved, he's obviously like trying to make it look like there were other people who could have been involved in her disappearance. If he's not involved, he's probably trying to like, he probably knows that they're suspicious of him and like trying to deflect blame, which is like, yeah, you don't, if you're not involved, you don't want to like get caught up in it. But at the same time, if you know something, be more
helpful,
like forthcoming with that information. Yeah.
It seemed like he was just trying to make her look bad. And it's like, why? She's missing, you know?
Interesting.
So after they questioned him and they got this information, LB was cleared of any suspicion, and this clue that, you know, her mother felt she had kind of led nowhere. While Shamika's family feels that police aren't actively searching for Shamika, Major Art Jackson of the Berkeley Police Department disagrees, saying, quote, I can assure you this department has tried to do everything in our power to find Shamika Cozy. He states that Shamika's case is still active and ongoing, and that they are following any viable leads that come in. Investigators believe... Sorry, go ahead.
I feel like they probably are, but it's kind of like, where were you at the beginning? But again, it's probably not
their
those
fault.
People's like actual fault. You know, they just were following their like protocol.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure that they are following up on all leads, and I hope so, but... It seems like there's like
the bare minimum. They're just doing the bare minimum to say that they're, yes, we're investigating or whatever. But also know like.
And maybe they're doing more than we know.
Right.
Like maybe they are like looking into people.
There's nothing to go on.
Yeah. Because it seems like other than that one lead with LB, like there's just no clues.
Yeah. So investigators believe Shamika left of her own accord, and while Paula and her family do agree that she left willingly, they do not believe that Shamika would have voluntarily stayed gone for all these years.
I agree. I mean, I don't think she would have gone off on her own and stayed gone. Maybe she left willingly to meet up with somebody, and then she, like, I don't know, something happened to her while with that person. But yeah. I don't think she, like, left with the intention of being gone forever.
Right. And that's kind of her family sentiment as well. And her mom fears that maybe one of the times that she snuck out and went to one of these clubs, that she maybe met an older man and possibly fell victim to sex trafficking.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I feel like she also could have just, like, met somebody and, like, gone went that night to like meet up with them for whatever reason, like just to meet up with them, and then they either like did something or convinced her to like stay, or you know, who knows.
Yeah. So Paula currently works in conjunction with Theta Person and Regina Sykes for the organization Looking for an Angel, which is a nonprofit organization that, according to their website, is dedicated to bringing missing persons back together with their loved ones, and they assist families in reporting their missing relatives and help them navigate the entire search process. They also strive to serve as a strong support group by holding special events to increase awareness about missing individuals.
Wow.
Some of their efforts include flyer and literature distribution, as well as speaking engagements. In addition, they assist with search and rescue operations and collaborate with other organizations to address the epidemic of disappearances. And it really is amazing because both Theta and Regina were missing or mothers of missing children like Paula.
Wow, that's amazing.
So in 2003, Theta's 9-year-old disabled son, Christian, went missing while in his abusive father's care. And let me just tell you, that might be one of the most heartbreaking cases I have ever read in my entire life. His father has since been charged with Christian's murder, though his remains have never been found.
Oh my God.
Regina's 25-year-old daughter, Monica, went missing in 2016. And in 2017, her remains were discovered. And her ex-boyfriend was eventually charged with her murder.
Wow, that's so sad.
I know. So you have these three amazing women who came together to try to make a difference in other families' lives that have children who have disappeared. And I'm always in such awe of like families who can take the absolute worst situations and turn them into something good and selfless like these women have.
Yeah, they're taking their horrific experiences and wanting to help others instead of just, you know, being so heartbroken that you can't do anything. They're like channeling that. And that takes a lot of strength. It does. And that's incredible that they're helping others.
Exactly.
After what they've been through.
So I will link their website in our show notes. If you would like to donate or share, please do. Paula told the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that she is still holding out hope that she will one day see her daughter again. She will never stop searching and will do everything in her power to ensure that the world will not forget about Shamika.
I honestly feel like this is one of those cases where it might not be impossible that she is still alive out there somewhere, like whether somebody is like holding her against her will or somebody manipulated her into staying with them and like, you know, something like that. I just feel like there's a very strong possibility that she could be out there somewhere and one day could be reunited with her mother.
I think so, too. Paula stated, quote, "I pray every day that you find your way home to your family. I hope you see this and know that your sisters and everyone want you home. My baby needs to be home with me." Aww. So sad. Shamika Kayanta Cozy was born on October 1st, 1992 to her mother, Paula Hill. She has two sisters, one older sister named Marquisha, and a younger sister who was only 10 months old when Shamika disappeared.
Oh my gosh.
That just like ripped my heart out when I read that because it's like she doesn't even know her sister.
Yeah. Hmm.
And Shamika would often care for her baby sister while their mother worked outside of the home to provide for her family because she was a single mom. Shamika and her family were incredibly close. Despite that, she did like going out. She wanted her independence. She wanted to meet boys. She wanted to hang out with friends. Like I mentioned before, I feel like that's very common for a 16-year-old girl, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, this happened to her as a result, I guess. I mean, we don't really know exactly the situation.
I feel like it's very clear to me that she was taken advantage of by somebody, whether that be somebody older than her or somebody else she met. She was, like, manipulated and taken advantage of, and that's so sad.
I think she
was just being a teenager. She was just hanging out with people, being a normal teenager.
Having fun, trying to live her best life.
Yeah, and somebody preyed upon that, and how sad.
I know. Shamika is a Black female with Black hair and brown eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was 5'5 and weighed somewhere between 135 and 160 pounds. She was last seen wearing a black long sleeve shirt, a tan Old Navy jacket, and blue jeans. Shamika had her ears pierced and she would often wear eyeglasses. She also went by the nickname Mika. Anyone with any information, big or small, are urged to contact the Berkeley Police Department at 314-524-3311, or you can contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. I will, of course, link both of these numbers in the show notes down below. I will also share the age progress photo of Shamika on our Facebook and Instagram, so please share that if you can. But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you guys have a wonderful weekend, and we will catch up with you guys next week with a brand new case. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.